You're listening to FUBAR Radio.
That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum on FUBAR Radio.
Hello, 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 everyone, and welcome to That Money Show with me, Gabriel, That Money Guy, here live on FUBAR Radio. I'm with you for the entire hour where I will be doing one thing and one thing only, and that is making you better with your money. It's a simple promise, but simplicity is always, in my opinion, the way to go. So what's going to be happening this week? Well, we've got a whole bunch of stuff that I like to throw at you to get your money brain working, running, a bit tickled. Starting off, we like to dive into the news, the economy, the actual stuff that affects the money in your back pocket. We like to stay away from that boring news, that kind of depressing news. Having said that, though, sometimes the money news in this country is a little bit upsetting, and it's my job to basically give you the harsh reality. I apologize about that in advance, but hopefully this week the news stories will be a little bit more positive. And then, of course, I like to bring in some of the most incredible names, range of expert, famous faces, all to share their own personal finance advice, experience, tips, and tricks. And coming up this week, I have Jonathan Mills, the Chief Commercial Officer at Money Plus Advice, who are a debt advisory service, and also Bola Sol, a financial advisor and the author of the very, very famous book. So I do hope you've read it, and if not, you might want to add this to your Christmas wish list, Your Money Life. If you don't have it, go grab it. It's a brilliant book. And if you're not convinced just yet, well, listen to the interview with Bola first, and that will probably do the convincing for you. So shall we start off with the news? I think it's probably a great place to start, because UK mortgage holders, I don't know how many of you are listening to me right now, but half of you could see your payments going up by, well, quite a lot over the next 3 years. That is according to the Bank of England. So, as most of you are aware, mortgage holders are getting or have been hit the hardest of kind of all different segments of people within the UK over the past few years through the cost of living crisis. Now, the main reason for that has been the Bank of England's interest rate. So, let me take you on a little story. Let's go on a journey here. Back to 2020, January, pre-COVID times, the world feels normal. Masks are things that only surgeons wear in this country and no one else except for the odd person you see on the train. And interest rates are low. Interest rates are really low. We're talking about below 1% in this country. And then all of a sudden, a whole bunch of things happen. Obviously, COVID being the most obvious. But we had huge spikes in our energy prices through conflicts such as the ones going on in Russia and Ukraine. And not just that, a whole cost of living crisis occurred because of a number of these factors basically combining at the same time. And one of the biggest outputs of that was a huge inflation spike. We saw inflation a couple of years ago go above 11% in this country. Now, inflation has settled back down today. It's kind of around 2% and a bit, bearing in mind the Bank of England want that rate to be at about 2%. But what has everything that I've just described to you, what did that actually do to people with mortgages? Well, the Bank of England tried to fight back against this huge inflation spike by raising interest rates. Now, I'm not going to dive in exactly the terms and conditions of why they do that. But basically, if inflation goes up, the Bank of England will raise interest rates to try and bring inflation back down. And yeah, they did this. It went up and they kept on bringing it up higher and higher. It went from 1 to 1.5 to 2 to 2.5 to 3 to 3.5. Eventually, it went above 5%, the Bank of England's interest rate. Now, what knock-on effect does this have? Well, it means that banks around the country also raise their interest rates, not only on saving products. So you've probably seen your saving interest rates go through the roof. Brilliant. Great. But if you're borrowing money, i.e. you're a mortgage holder, your interest rates on your repayments will go up. So when you remortgage sometime in 2023 or 2024, you are now remortgaging at a much higher rate. That brings us to today, where mortgage rates are higher than they definitely were 4 or 5 years ago. But we are most mortgage holders are hoping that this rate slowly starts to trickle down as the Bank of England trickle down their interest rates. So what is this actual news story that's going on right now? Well, the news story is this new estimate that's come out that about 4.5 million mortgages are expected to see payments rise by 2027. So why is this surprising news? Why is this news at all? We know that interest rates have gone up. We know that mortgage rates have gone up. Well, we're now looking at a period that's almost up to 7 years after the original spike in interest rates from the Bank of England. And yet, the Bank of England are still assuming that around 4.5 million mortgages are going to continue going up. But why up? Surely down, right? The Bank of England are lowering interest rates. Well, they are lowering interest rates, but no way near as quickly as a lot of people had expected even just a few months ago, which is why banks aren't really so keen on lowering their own mortgage rates at the moment. In fact, quite a lot of banks are raising their interest rates. So let me give you a little bit of a table and you can hear exactly what's going to be going on in terms of the expectations of where mortgage rates and mortgage repayments are going to be going by the end of 2027. Now, like I just told you, quite a lot of people are going to be increasing. 4.4 million people are going to have their mortgage rates increasing. And that is about half of all mortgage holders in this country. So I've got about 19% should expect their mortgage repayments to go up between £1 and £100 per month. About 26% should expect them to go up between £100 and £500 a month. And 5% of current mortgage holders should expect by 2027 their mortgage repayments to go up by more than £500. This is quite some serious amounts of money. Now, let me actually share with you the reverse of that, because about around 23% of mortgage holders shouldn't expect any change to their mortgages, I suppose, up until 2027. And the majority of those are going to be people that don't have to refix. They probably just fixed in the past few years for a five-year fixed rate. So they're not going to be looking at any change by the end of 2027. Then 18% should expect a drop up to £100. 8% a drop up to £500. And now here's the big one. For you lucky 1% of mortgage holders who should expect their monthly rate of their repayment to drop by more than £500. Now, a lot of you are probably listening to this as people that are looking to get on the property ladder, aren't on the property ladder yet, kind of thinking, what does this actually mean for me? Am I getting further away from getting on the property ladder, or am I getting closer towards that goal? Now, the truth is things aren't feeling like they're changing too drastically. The main kind of outcome or output from this, I suppose, piece of information, this survey, this research, is that mortgage rates aren't dropping as quickly as possible. In fact, for a few people, they're still going to be trickling upwards. But it's not too drastic. So the question is, if you can currently get on the property ladder, it shouldn't affect you too much heading into 2027. However, if you've already had a mortgage, what this probably does mean is that don't just expect, if you're coming off that mortgage in the next 2 to 3 years, that you're automatically going to be getting a lower rate because, you know, interest rates, Bank of England, they're starting to lower interest rates. So therefore, surely, no, everything will be fine. No, absolutely not. If you are coming off a mortgage and like needing to renew it in the next 6 to 12 months, I would say, or you are aware of when that 6 to 12 kind of month ticking clock begins, my recommendation would be to start looking at rates early. The earlier you look, the better. More information always helps us. And not just that, you can look into rates 6 months before you renew. And within that 6 month period between, you know, when you've renewed and the actual time that it renews 6 months later, if rates get better, you can improve them. But if they get worse, you are locked in at the good rate that you locked in at. Okay. And this is just basically me telling people, don't be naive. Don't rest on your laurels. Be active. Yeah. Do the work. It will save you, quite literally, in the case of 5% of people, more than £500 a month. Okay. Cool. So what else is going on in the news? Well, unless you live under a rock, you're probably aware that last Friday, about 2 days ago, was Black Friday. And I gave a whole spiel last week on how to stay safe around Black Friday. When I say stay safe, I'm not talking about scams. I'm talking about staying safe from yourself and the fact that all of us go a little bit like doolally on a Black Friday and go, no, I'm sensible with money. All of a sudden, £500 has been spent on who knows what. Hopefully you're returning £499 worth of that and you're a good spender. Or you listened to all of my advice last week and you didn't buy anything on Black Friday. Or even better than that, you did actually buy some stuff, but it was at an actual sale price. You weren't just being tricked into a sale price. I'm not talking about any brands in particular that like to up their price like the month before Black Friday and then bring it back down onto Black Friday to the original price. It's not a sale price. It's just the original price, mate. Stop tricking us. But today, sorry, rant over. Today is actually Cyber Monday, okay? Cyber Monday is... I mean, what is Cyber Monday? Genuinely, what is Cyber Monday? I think it's just like... companies are like, well, you know, we get so much probably income and revenue on Black Friday. Let's just extend it a little bit better and let's just call it Cyber Monday. I mean, that's actually quite a good name. quite like it. Probably just means there's more sales, more reasons for people to buy things, and more money for companies to make. Now, why am I bringing up Cyber Monday in the first place? Well, the reason for that is that there is a huge, huge, A, number of scams you need to be aware of, but B, it's just a huge amount of shopping still. I mean, it says here that shoppers spent an estimated of £13.3 billion last Black Friday. And I'm sure a lot of that has leaked into Cyber Monday, having millions, if not billions, of sales. But here's the warning for you guys, and this is a study from Which that has come out around this period of the year. 9 out of 10 Black Friday offers, and by the way, when I say Black Friday, please include Cyber Monday when I'm saying that, but 9 out of 10 Black Friday, Cyber Monday, sale weekend at the end of November offers are cheaper or the same price at other times of the year, according to research by consumer group Which, who like to have a question mark in their title, by the way. I still love that about Which. And secondly, who are very, like, they're like the nation's, like, what's it called, sweetheart. We trust them. So, how can you tell if a discount is genuinely a discount? How can you actually tell if you're getting a good deal on Black Friday? Well, listen in right here. This is what you're going to do. You're simply going to do a little bit of research. That's right. You're going to put in some effort. You can go on so many different websites. Camel, 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 Price Spy, Idealo. There are so many different websites that allow you to pop in the product and look at the average price of it over the past 12 months. That's all you need to do, especially if you're spending over 20 or 50 quid. Put in a little bit more effort and see if you're actually getting a sale price. And if you're not, please just don't buy it. Don't get caught up in this whole fuss. That is how you find out if a discount is genuinely a discount and you're not just being tricked into it like how I just told you. Because you guys, unfortunately, are being preyed upon by big companies who have millions, if not billions, pounds worth of research to figure out how to basically make you buy more shit. And the other thing, like I always say, which is one of the best mottos you should always have around any sale, and this comes from Martin Lewis, is if you were going to buy the item anyway, and it's 50% off on Black Friday, and I'm going to add something in, and you've done your research, and it's genuinely 50% off on Black Friday, and you buy it, well done. You've saved some money. However, for the probably 99% of you listening, including myself at times, I will admit fault, and I did do this on Black Friday. But if you're one of those people that are scrolling on Amazon, on Nike, on whatever website you're on, looking for a good deal because you know it's Black Friday and there's sales going on, and you're like, ooh, that looks like it's a good price, I'm going to buy it anyway. Even if it is a good price, you're only buying it because you were scrolling on these websites, then you've been tricked and you are wasting 100% of your money. And on that note, I'm going to take a little break to kind of cool down because I'm absolutely fuming. But stick around, because straight after this, Jonathan Mills, the Chief Commercial Officer at Money Plus Advice, a debt advisory service, will be joining me on That Money Show.
FUBAR Radio.
What the Hell with Gabby Allen.
Now I am joined by Faye Edwards, international fitness presenter. How do you personally stay so motivated?
We are all aging. That is my motivation. Sorry, Gabby. It's the truth. And we can't change that, but we can help ourselves and keep our independence for as physically long as possible. It's about lifestyle. I have a better lifestyle. That is my motivation.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio.
Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored, and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all FUBAR shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app.
Just search for FUBAR Radio on the Apple and Google App Stores.
The FUBAR Radio app. Get it today.
Get it today.
It was calm on the beach, so I took my little girl out on the water. Then we hit the wind, and it blew us out to sea, faster than we could paddle back, and we learned our lesson from these guys, the crew who got us home. Thank you.
Respect the water and watch out for the winds. In an emergency, call 999 and ask for the Coast Guard.
Registering to vote means you can take part in the way decisions are made in the UK. When you register to vote, you are then able to cast your vote at local and national elections. You can help choose who runs your area and makes decisions about things you care about. Millions of people in the UK aren't registered to vote, and they miss out on having their voice heard. It's quick and easy to register. It only takes 5 minutes. You can do it online, or you can ask for a paper form at your local council. Register to vote now at gov.uk/register-to-vote.
Access all areas with Bobby Norris.
We've got Georgia Harrison, my SAS sister. That's when I thought shit's got real.
Well, I got out, didn't I, with my little earmuffs on and my scarf. And they didn't show that either because obviously they can't put everything in. But he looks at me and he goes, what the fuck are those? And he grabbed my earmuffs and he threw them across the New Zealand landscape. I thought, that's a fucking liberty. £3 from Sheen, they were. I was still in my Sheen Queen era.
Politics Uncensored with Ali Milani and Zoe Grunewald.
What would you be advising the Labour leadership to do at this point?
My view is just apologise. I went to the theatre last night. I'm with my wife and family, and as I'm walking, a bloke says very loudly, John McDonnell, has he paid for his tickets? I went back to the bloke, said, yeah, I did pay for my tickets, and I always do. What that whole ticketing thing and all the free gifts thing doesn't just damage those individuals, it damages us all, because they all think, oh, they're all the same, and we're not.
That Money Show on FUBAR Radio with Gabriel Nussbaum.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to That Money Show live on FUBAR Radio with me, Gabriel, That Money Guy. And as I just said a couple of minutes ago, joining me now on the show is Jonathan Mills, the Chief Commercial Officer at Money Plus Advice, who are a debt advisory service. Jonathan, welcome to That Money Show. How are you doing?
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Absolute pleasure. I'm doing very well, very kind of you to ask. And I'm going to kind of dive straight in and throw one straight at you, which hopefully you can answer relatively easily, which is, can you just tell us more about who Money Plus Advice are, what you do, who you're for, et cetera, et cetera?
Sure. I'll try and be as succinct as possible. So we are a leading debt management solution provider. We work solely with consumers. We're FCA regulated. And ultimately, what we do is we deliver regulated debt advice to thousands of consumers every week with a view to setting them straight with their problematic debt, whether that might be in a formal solution, an informal solution. We offer the full spectrum of debt management solutions in-house. So we look to support consumers across the UK with those solutions.
Brilliant. I mean, what a great mission to be on. And I'm assuming it's probably quite a busy time of year for you guys. Looking at kind of November sales, Christmas sale, people are probably putting themselves more and more into debt this time of year and starting to think, you know, January, new year, new me, all that kind of stuff. I actually want to turn things around and start off 2025 with on a fresh page. So could you kind of share what are maybe even a specific case study, but what are the range of, I suppose, solutions? You said informal, but what does that actually translate to the average person that calls in?
So we deal with people that have got just what we would deem as normal debt. Everyone's in debt, right? So the generally reaches a point where you hit a ceiling of debt where it's no longer manageable. And there's that horrible saying, isn't there, that we should live to our means, but actually it's really difficult because circumstance gets in the way. And what we recognize with pretty much every customer we speak to is that they've committed themselves. And Christmas, you say that this is a busy time for us, but actually we're trying to educate people at this period so that people don't get into a debt position. And we're trying to steer people away from getting credit that ultimately could become unmanageable in the not so distant future. But ultimately what we provide, the two core kind of solutions, if you like, are the informal one, which is a debt management plan, which effectively sees us set you on the straight and narrow. We organise your income and expenditure and try and guide you through the hurdles of monthly expenditure. And then whatever you have left at the end of the month after you've paid for all of your expenses, we will support you in paying off that debt to all of your creditors, all the people that you owe money to. So we kind of facilitate you paying off your debt. And the formal version of that is something called an IVA, which you may or may not have heard of. I certainly didn't hear of these plans before I joined Money Plus, by the way, 6 years ago. So we're absolutely aware that there isn't too much awareness around these solutions. But an IVA is a more formal arrangement which sees you pay off your debt over a period of 5 years. But the formality of it is you end up on a register and ultimately you're writing off a proportion of your debt, generally around 60 to 70% of that. And we will negotiate with your creditors, the people that you owe money to to sort of explain to them this is all you can afford and actually this is a positive outcome for you. So where we what we try and do in every situation is make sure that the customer is at the center of everything that we do. And that might mean that we just simply give some budgeting advice, and quite often we do. In fact, more than not, we do. So we won't always put people in a debt solution. We might just say, you know what, you're spending a little bit too much on this. Let's try and get you back into a position where you're in the green and you've got some disposable income every single month. And quite often that's the case. People panic when they see, oh my gosh, I've got £1,000 or whatever coming out this month and I've only got £500 money to spend on it. And people can panic. And we often just try and calm them down and put them on the straight and narrow. And more often than not, thankfully, that does work. But wouldn't it be great if people didn't need our solutions or our advice?
Of course. In an ideal world, you guys wouldn't exist. But I suppose in a real world, we need you. And it's a very important job. Now, I am going to start to ask you a few more questions, I think, specifically around this time of year, because I said it at the beginning, and I know you're talking about giving education, especially around the period where people are spending so much more money than they ordinarily would, potentially without a plan and sometimes, you know, on a whim. But before I do that, like, when someone is calling in, what kind of position are they in the first place? Because I know when it comes to money and talking about money in this country, it's such a difficult thing to do. Like, we just don't like doing it even when it's going well and things are on the up. So how much harder can it be to call in and admit fault when things are on the down and things are getting really, really bad? So are people calling you when things are literally there is no other solution? Or are you finding potentially even more and more people calling you when potentially there is more of a light at the end of the tunnel? It is a clearer route out of it and they're being a bit more sensible and getting that advice at an earlier stage. What's the range?
Really interesting. We see the full range, and actually we've been really it's really interesting to see that the probably younger demographic are the people that are a bit more proactive. And whether that's because they're panicking a lot sooner in the cycle or not, I don't know. I couldn't tell you the psychology behind it, but we're certainly getting quite a large proportion of younger people that will get in touch with us and talk about their debt. And actually their debt position might not be too catastrophic at that point. So they're really welcomed. To the other end of the spectrum where they've got the bailiffs knocking on the door and they're really super stressed and they're at the point of breakage. And unfortunately, that's the kind of customer that we're speaking to more and more. So they are literally at wit's end. They have no alternative option. They've been to friends, family. In some cases, they've been to the free sector. They've tried to get advice from charities and they keep hitting a brick wall. And more often than not, it's around budgeting. So going back to your original point, Christmas is that time of year where we all spend money that we probably haven't got, right? So we're really, really trying to advocate preparing for Christmas, setting a budget and avoiding those nightmare impulsive purchases that unfortunately seem to be the way these days.
Yeah.
With social pressure.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm kind of surprised that you said so many young people are calling in. Because obviously, I mean, not obviously, but you would really hope that younger people potentially aren't in that catastrophic position, perhaps that someone later in life, more responsibility, maybe children, maybe a property, that's when debt can not just become bad, but can become catastrophic within their life because it has so many impacts on not just them and so many other things. But at a younger age, you're seeing people interact and understand their finances more, be aware of it and be willing to open up. So I am surprised about that. But You did start to kind of like tickle around the message of Christmas, and it's a really important one as we've literally just ended December. It's Cyber Monday today. It was Black Friday 2 days ago. It's the period of the year where people are literally just scrolling for the sake of scrolling, buying for the sake of buying. They see a good deal. They think, let's just jump on it. And brands are so, so good at making us spend more money than we had ever planned or wanted to. And that is even for those of us that have planned in the first place. So around this time of year, heading towards Christmas, what are kind of the key pieces of advice that you offer them to manage their spending during this period?
Yeah, I think it's a difficult one, isn't it? Because if we were all I'm not perfect. I never am at Christmas and I always overspend. But I think setting a budget is a really obvious thing to say, but that for me is the North Star. If you can set a budget and stick to it, then you're on to a winner. And I saw a stat saying that you should never spend more than 2% of your salary, but I just don't think that's a realistic expectation because we talked about young people just then, and what we find is that young people actually, because of the access of credit these days, that's why they are in a problematic debt position, because they've got access to credit so easily these days, whether that be on buy now pay later products or with, you know, we've seen people getting buy now pay later on takeaway food, for example, which is terrifying. So I think the access to credit for young people is quite scary when it starts to build up. But over and above that, I think you have to set a budget, and setting a budget is one thing. Avoiding the impulse buys is another thing. And therefore my second piece of advice would be keep something in your basket for 24, 48 hours. Don't make an impulsive buy. I read a stat saying that 48% of people get kind of lured into that impulse buy, and then 70% of those people regret it later down the line. I'm one of those people. I'm really easy to sell to, and you can get followed now on social media, can't you? And there was something that I looked at a few days ago, and oh, it's popped up on Facebook now, so it's a sign I've got to buy it. And I think avoid those impulse buys. Keep it in your basket for a couple of days, mull over it, do your research, see if you can find it cheaper elsewhere, and then ask yourself, do I need it? And go back to that original point, can I afford it? Is it within my budget?
Yeah, that's really, really good stuff. I suppose brands around this weekend in particular, I mean, every website I've been into has that clicking, like that ticking clock that goes, you know, you've got 16 hours left until this sale price has disappeared. And they're so good at it. And so it's always, even if it is those 16 hours that you use to take a breath, put it in your basket, whatever time period you can get between you putting it in your basket, taking a step away, and then coming back to it and making a more logical decision around the purchase, will make the world of difference. Obviously, 48 hours, a week, a month is even better than that. But any time period, I would highly recommend. And yeah, it is scary how much people are spending this year on Christmas. I think I was trying to do some research about the average amount, and I think in the UK it's around just over £500 that the average person spends. London wise, it's over £900, getting close to 1,000. And I actually went out into the street and asked a few people with some interviews, how much are you spending this Christmas? And out of about 10 interviews, I would tell you at least 3 or 4 said over £1,000 they would expect to be spending over Christmas. So it is a really pressurized time of year. For those people that are listening and are in debt or do call you and they still want to enjoy Christmas to some extent, how do you navigate the idea of getting gifts for the people you love and showing them that affection through that way, whilst also kind of being sensible because you know you have issues with your money?
Yeah, sensible is the key, isn't it? So if we can prepare, we know Christmas is coming, if we can prepare, that's really useful. And we've joked a little bit about November and kind of Cyber Monday and Black Friday and things, but actually you can get some really good bargains in those periods. So if you prepare for Christmas and you start to make the purchases early, then the chances are you're going to save money. Equally, we should also try and not buy materialistic things, which is really easy to say. We all like things, and there's so much pressure on social media, especially to buy our children things. So think about memories, think about other ways in which you can gift, especially if you've got that budget and you can't spend some time with loved ones, take them out and do things together. That would be my best advice. And that's, you know, toys, etc., quickly get out of date, don't they? So let's try and spend some time with people as opposed to spending all the time.
This might be a hard one, but how often do you recommend to people to have an actual honest conversation with the people they love around their finances, in terms of saying, for example, this year, I'm really sorry, I'm not going to be buying anyone any presents. Like, my money is in such an unhealthy stage right now that it's just not possible for me to do. I wonder, A, how often is that a conversation you have with people? And then B, how often are they willing to actually take on that step? Because I think that's probably one of the hardest things to do.
I think it's, we find that people don't do it. And I can completely understand why. People don't want to speak to their loved ones. And we speak to people all the time that haven't got the courage to actually speak to their loved ones. And that's okay. Sometimes it's easier to speak to people like us, a completely independent party that can kind of guide you through it. But when it comes to messaging that you're not going to be buying gifts, etc., that's a tough one, isn't it? And we all know too well the stress, the stigma that's associated with debt. And therefore, having that conversation is if we're honest, it's an impossible conversation. And I would actually say more often than not, people won't have that conversation. Mm. But what I would implore people to do is to speak to somebody, whether that's us, a charity, you know, speak to someone who's got regulated, who's regulated by the FCA, who can really give you a well-rounded view of the world and not kind of push you into any situation by giving you more credit options, by pushing you into a particular debt solution. Speak to someone who can offer you, like Money Plus, any debt solution. And more often than not, like I said earlier on, we don't actually put people into a debt solution. It's just advice. So if you can't speak to your loved ones, which I actually, if we're realistic, I don't think that's something that we can push people to do, then speak to an independent party like ourselves, and perhaps we can give you that nudge and give you that confidence to then go away and speak to your loved ones once you've got the situation under control.
I think that's a brilliant way to end this interview. So Jonathan, thank you so much. And for those who are listening out there, do look up Money Plus, you know, reach out, because like you said, these are people who have experienced probably everything when it comes to debt that you can imagine. Yeah. You're not alone. You won't be the first person with a problem you can think of. So Jonathan, thank you so much for your time.
Appreciate your time, Gabriel. Thank you.
Cheers. Well, there you go. If you are someone who is in debt or knows someone, you know, a family, a loved one, or a person in debt, Money Plus is probably a great place for them to start. Impartial advice, people who are experienced on the topic, so please do head there. And I do kind of want to follow up on that one, because at this stage, I do Money Tip of the Week. And it is going to start to focus around Christmas. But when I say around Christmas, I'm talking about the idea of consumption and overconsumption, because this is the month for it. I'm not going to lie, I bought quite a few things on Friday, things that I regret, things that, you know, I'm probably going to have to return the moment they do actually turn up to my door, because companies are so good at this. Even for someone like me that tries to be as switched on as possible with their money, with budgeting, with all these kind of things, I still fall prey to it. So don't feel bad if you bought something or you happen to get something delivered that you're not quite sure about. But you can always, you know, reverse that decision and return that item, or learn that lesson the hard way for next year. Let's see what happens with me. You're going to have to stick around to next year to figure out that lesson. But my tip for you is around the idea of gifting presents around this time of year, especially, obviously, Christmas. Because I think it's come to the point where Christmas present has gone a little bit too overboard. You start to have that kind of net that you're giving presents to gets wider and wider and wider. You know, it's not just your immediate family anymore. It's cousins. It's an entire friendship group. It's your colleagues at work. I mean, if you're a little bit older, it's, you know, the different parents and teachers at school and all of the various kids that come around to A, B, C, D, E, F, G. And the list just goes on and on and on and on and on. So here's one thing that I want you to potentially consider this year. Number one, if you're going to give someone some irrelevant £20 gift because simply they are going to give you an irrelevant £20 gift, maybe just text each other this year and be like, should we just skip the gifts this year? Merry Christmas. That's probably a great place to start to your third cousin once removed. You don't need another scarf, okay? Number two, if you're in a group such as at work with colleagues or something like that, instead of getting a present for every single one of them, just do a secret Santa. Literally. Name out of a hat, you just have to buy one present, everyone gets a present, everyone gives a present, there's a budget on that. Nice and easy, more money savings. And if you aren't quite, you know, comfortable enough to do either of those two options, one thing you can always look to do is potentially do some kind of charity donation where you donate 20 quid, 50 quid, 100 quid to a charity, and you send a text to all of the people who that can cover, all 100 third cousins that you don't really want to get a present for, and say, hey, just to let you know, this year I've donated X amount in your name for Christmas. I promise you, they cannot get angry with you. And if they can, you can disown them as a third cousin. How about that? Don't know if that's legal, but you can try it. How's that sound for a good piece of money advice this Christmas? Anyway, stick around, guys, because after this break, I'm going to be joined by Bola Sol, the financial advisor and author of the book, Your Money Life.
Fubar Radio.
What the Health with Gabby Allen.
Now I am joined by Faye Edwards, international fitness presenter. How do you personally stay so motivated?
We are all aging. That is my motivation. Sorry, Gabby. It's the truth. And we can't change that, but we can help ourselves and keep our independence for as physically long as possible. It's about lifestyle. I have a better lifestyle. That is my motivation.
You're listening to Fubar Radio.
Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored, and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all Fubar shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app.
Just search for Fubar Radio on the Apple and Google App Stores.
The Fubar Radio app. Get it today.
Get it today.
It's the sound of your mates alive. It's getting to more gigs this year and the next. It's the sound of saying, I got you, mate. It's the sound of mates enjoying even more of this. It's the sound of mates getting home instead of here. Click your seatbelt, because you're twice as likely to be killed or seriously injured if you don't think.
When you notice something wrong, it tends to grow and eventually take over, to the point you can't really think of anything else. If something in your body doesn't feel right, the thought it could be cancer can play on your mind. Tests could put your mind at rest. Finding out sooner is always better. Your NHS wants to see you. Contact your GP practice.
Access All Areas with Bobby Norris.
We've got Georgia Harrison, my SIS sister. That's when I thought shit's got real.
Well, I got out, didn't I, with my little earmuffs on and my scarf. And they didn't show that either, because obviously I can't put everything in. But he looks at me and he goes, what the fuck are those? And he grabbed my earmuffs and he threw them across the New Zealand landscape. I thought, that's a fucking liberty. £3 from Sheen, they were. I was still in my Sheen Queen era.
Politics Uncensored with Ali Milani and Zoe Grunewald.
What would you be advising the Labour leadership to do at this point?
My view is just apologise. I went to the theatre last night. I'm with my wife and family, and as I'm walking, a bloke says very loudly, John McDonnell, has he paid for his tickets? I went back to the bloke, said, yeah, I did pay for my tickets, and I always do. What that whole ticketing thing and all the free gifts thing doesn't just damage those individuals, it damages us all, because they all think, oh, they're all the same, and we're not.
Making personal finance simpler with Gabriel Nussbaum. This is That Money Show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to That Money Show live on Fubar Radio with me, Gabriel, That Money Guy. And joining me now on the show is the incredible Bola Sol, a financial advisor and, like I said, the author of the book Your Money Life. Bola, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
I'm well, thank you. How are you? Thanks for having me.
It's my absolute pleasure. I was actually really excited to see when I saw your name on the sheet for the show today, because I know you're an incredible financial educator. So I'm very excited to pick your brains on all things money, if you don't mind. I mean, I suppose that's what you came here for, right? I mean, it's That Money Show.
Yeah, definitely.
But let's kick off with the book, if that's okay. What inspired you to write Your Money Life?
Do you know what? This is such a great question. Funnily enough, I was called into a meeting and I was essentially asked to write the book, which is very different. So I remember it was just one of those moments. I come in and there's like six women and I'm like, oh, this must be a very serious meeting. And they were like, we think you can write that book for women that's about money, that you can really break it down. And what's interesting is when you're just, you know, I don't want to say just doing content online, you know, you don't know how it's manifesting into people thinking about ideas about what you can do. So they were like, we really think you can do this book, and, you know, got a 2-year timeline. And I was like, okay, this has actually really sparked my interest. So we all came together and did the book.
Wow. I mean, that sounds like quite a unique type of meeting. I don't think many people go into like their Monday morning 9 a.m. catch up and then get surrounded and told they're going to be writing a book over the next 2 years. But hey-o, why not? I mean, what made you say yes? Did they convince you, or did you already know you were going to write something around money and you just had to be pushed over the edge?
Well, it's a mix of both. They convinced me, funnily enough. This was in 2022. So in 2023, I became a qualified financial advisor. So I told them, this is what I'm working towards. So it worked in with the timeline that, you know, everything I'm studying, although I studied maths and finance at uni, but, you know, taking it to a new level, everything I'm studying can coincide quite nicely with Your Money Life and help people understand things in a simpler way. And that's what it's done. And I've received some great feedback. So yeah, they really did kind of push me over the edge for something I wanted to do. Sometimes you've just got to know that you've got the right backing. And that's where I really love Penguin and Murky Books.
Oh, well, that's amazing. I don't want you to spoil the book exactly, because we still want everyone to go out there and buy Your Money Life and read the entire thing. But would you be willing to share maybe something small within it, a small takeaway, a principle that you think everyone really should know?
Oh, this is a good one. So there's three main sections: healthier, wealthier, and happier. However, I must say chapter 13 is my favorite chapter. It's how the economy affects you, your life, and work. I truly believe if everybody reads that chapter in particular, they will have such a good understanding of how the things that are currently happening in the world affect them. Because when people don't understand cause and effect, it just means that they always feel like they're stumbling with their finances and they don't know what to do. And that chapter will really help you. Of course, there's many chapters that will be helpful because it's all personal finance, but it's also inheritance and wills. But how the economy affects you, your life and your work is one of my favorite chapters.
I like that. Lucky chapter 13, am I right? That's the one that you picked out of all of them. And I wasn't expecting that way to go, because obviously some people would say, you know, it would be about investing, the chapter on that, or the chapter about living within your means. But you've gone for how the economy and I suppose your finances interact with each other. And you did briefly explain for a second that not knowing has huge consequences to your finances. But what does understanding that link between your money and the economy and the way they kind of interact with each other, what benefits will that give you with your finances?
So, for example, if people are able to look at maybe the industry they work in and what's happening in that industry, they may be able to see, okay, are profits going up or down, or how is that industry doing in general, let's say technology. From that standpoint, people may be able to say, I wonder if there's going to be redundancies by a certain point in the year. I wonder if I'll still have a job in the new tax year, for example. Also think about things like the autumn budget. If some people say things like, look, I don't want to read up on that, I don't care. And I see a lot of people do that. And then they say, oh my gosh, did you know this was going to change? And I say, yes, because I was listening to that. You know, some things, it's almost like your health, right? If you're not feeling well, you shouldn't ignore it. Are people doing the same with their financial health? What are they doing to hear whether they will be in a good position or a bad one?
Well, very well explained. I am fully on board now with reading chapter 13. I would probably recommend people to read chapter 1 to 12 in the lead up, but why not just go straight to chapter 13, get the good stuff, and then start again back at the beginning. But if it's all right with you, yeah. I want to dive into this time of year. It's been a very heavy theme of this week's episode throughout the show, and especially the topic of Christmas, because it is the period of giving, which in my head translates to the period of overconsumption, buying things, stuff, and then more things again. So what advice would you give to people who want to celebrate Christmas, who want to, you know, give stuff and things to the people they love, because that's how they want to show affection this time of year? How can they cope around this time of year in a sensible financial way?
I think people should audit. And I also think we should start giving more secondhand gifts.
Oh, I like that one.
So it's really okay. So let's say, for example, you buy something and maybe you've barely used it, or you know someone in your life would actually have use out of it. Go ahead and give it to that person. I'm spending Christmas at my brother's. He has the biggest home, so we're all going to his. And I know he suffers from dry skin. I bought two buttercreams and I'm not using one of them. And I am now specifically saving it for him as opposed to buying another one. I literally have gift bags of goodies that I'm like, oh, I thought I'd use that and I didn't. And that's such a good way for people to sort of re-gift without consuming, because there's many people who are in need in this time of year. And it's just a great way, because some people don't even know presents are coming, but you're able to, you know, get rid of some things, but also give it to a better home, someone who'd actually like to use it and
would appreciate it.
I like that. So how would this look in practice? Is it time to go with a bit of like a flashlight around the house, go into the cupboards, open the drawers and have a look at all that kind of stuff that hasn't been touched? You put it away, you bought it a year ago and you're like, I definitely need this. And you realise you've used it once over the past 12 months.
Absolutely, absolutely. Or even potentially, you know, you could sell it. If you can't give it to anyone else, you could sell it and potentially donate it to a good cause or things like that. But there's so many things you can do. This has been, 2024 has been my year of the audit. I have been auditing my life, looking at what makes sense and what doesn't, and even having serious conversations with myself and saying, Bola, are you really using this? Or are you just holding on to it for the sake of semantics? And I think a lot of us do that. And then we just end up with a lot of clutter, and then it's a vicious little cycle.
I like this. People, if you are listening, first week of December, it's time for a stuff audit. Go around, find the stuff, and don't just throw it out or anything like that. Sell it or re-gift it. And if you really want, sell it and put it towards your gift fund. There you go. That's a nice bit of a financial tip for the year. I want to look with you, Bola, past Christmas, because it's the classic January 1st, you know, new year, new me. This is the year where I'm going to have my finances under control. I'm going to maybe become debt free. I'm going to start saving. I'm going to start investing. This is the year I want to buy a property for the first time. People, you know, get so much energy at the start of the new year. And then, you know, 2 weeks in, it's what was the goal that I had? I can't actually remember what I wanted to do. And I just feel like that's such a recurring theme every single year. Now, don't get me wrong. I love New Year resolutions. I think that's a brilliant opportunity to kind of reset yourself and remotivate yourself if you can continue it past January 14th, as an example. Yeah. But if someone is listening and they want to set themselves a bit of a financial goal, maybe they're a bit limited in income, or maybe they just need that full reset, what are the things they can start thinking about now so that when January 1st comes around, they can hit the road running?
I would say that they should pace themselves. People need to pace themselves. The notion that the clock is going to tick and everything is just going to change overnight just doesn't work. And I think what's key as well is that people know themselves and their bodies and what works for them. So if you have a goal, I think it's good to have a time frame of it. As we know about SMART goals. So put a time span on when you want to achieve that goal, but also maybe have a grace period for if you don't get that. Now, some people do this thing where they say, I don't know, for example, I want to go to the gym and I want to go 3 to 4 times a week. And then maybe if they only hit once or twice in a particular week, then it becomes, oh man, I feel bad. And people do that with their finances, right? They mess up for a month or 2 months and then out of nowhere it's, oh, I can't do this anymore. Just get back on the ladder. That's life, you know. And I think people need to apply the same thing when it comes to their New Year's resolutions. I actually don't set too many goals for the start of the year, actually. Well, I do, but I don't. The pace at which I look at it is very different. So I actually potentially start my new year around April, so the new tax year. And I tend to use Q1 very much as admin time and a big build up to, oh, great, the seasons have changed. I feel like I have more energy, and I'll just use the rest to be like, what can I do without overwhelming myself with new year, new me?
I really like that. So perhaps if you're listening, use that Q1, use January to March for a bit of like a practice round, a bit of a no fault. You can make mistakes during that period, but set yourself up for success from Bola's Q2, April onwards, financial year. I like that, especially for financy people. And that's a really nice way to go about it. And like we said, just because you slip up once doesn't mean you can't jump straight back on the ladder. But I've got one more question for you, and it is a very simple one that I love asking people that work within the kind of financial industry and financial education. But what is one piece of advice you would give to a younger version of yourself?
Ooh, one piece of advice would probably be to continue to stay curious and keep asking questions. One of the things that I realized is that sometimes when you're younger, people can just try and hush you up because they just think you're young and you don't know any better. And then sometimes you realize actually you don't actually know the answer. So I would say stay curious. That's what I would tell my younger self. Stay curious about everything, about financial systems, about life and how things work, and keep asking why. I think, you know, we've got it all wrong. We look at kids, you know, the ones that are like toddlers, and they're like, why? We can do I think we should do that as adults as well, and just ask, okay, why exactly does that work, and keep tracing back, keep being curious.
Brilliant. And read chapter 13. You forgot that one as well. Read chapter
13. Yes, I did.
Bella, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate you coming on That Money Show.
Thank you for having me.
Well, there you go. That was Bella Soul, the author of Your Money Life. If you want a good Christmas present that will actually help people down the line, that book might be the one for you. Now, it is time for audience questions. Every week, you guys write in and DM us on Instagram at That Money Show. And this is the period of the show where we actually answer the questions that you've written to us. So should we dive straight in with Timothy's question? I think so. So the question is, can you explain what a buy now, pay later payment method is and why some companies can offer you this as a way to pay for big ticket items? I thought it was only cars that were bought on finance, but now it seems to be everything. Timothy, brilliant question. For those of you who don't know buy now, pay later, you might have heard of BNPL. Stands for buy now, pay later. Surprise, surprise. So the question is, can I explain what it is and why companies offer this? So buy now, pay later is literally a company, pretty much anyone does it, spreading out payments for something that you want. So maybe they'll spread it over 6 months, 3 months. Maybe they'll put a deposit up front and then you pay for the rest over a period of time. That's all it is. It's quite literally you buy something, you get the item now and you pay for it later. So you pay for it over a period of time. And as discussed earlier on the show, some food delivery companies, I don't actually know which one specifically, are allowing you to do this, which is pretty crazy. Now, the reason that they do this is probably quite simple. It means more people buy more things. If you can't afford something now, well, don't worry, because the shop offer buy now, pay later. 0% interest, so you'll pay the exact same amount as the price it is now, but you'll spread it over 3 months. Obviously, a shop is going to incentivize more people to buy more things. That's why they do it. Now, whilst it can be a very handy and attractive tool, I would just warn you to be cautious around it. And you're going to ask me, why? Why should I be cautious? I'm spreading the payment over 3 months. That's brilliant. I pay the exact same price. It's 0% interest. Great. Firstly, a lot of different shops have different policies. So not all of them are interest-free. That's the first thing to look at. Number two, is that some of them have late payment fees. So let's say in 3 months' time, something goes horribly wrong. A month after you bought this and paid later, you lose your job and you don't have the income to pay for that item down the line. You might have a late payment fee and things might accrue without you realizing. So it's always advisable, probably generally in life, to avoid as much debt as you can, especially around these kind of consumer goods. I mean, if we're talking about things like mortgages, etc., different ball game. That's not buy now, pay later. That's a different product altogether. So that's kind of what it is and why it exists. My logic and reasoning around it is as follows. Number one, if you can afford the entire item, don't put yourself into needless debt. I get it's 0% interest and you can spread the payment and lower the burden. But if it's not a burden, just and you actually can afford the item, you budgeted for it, et cetera, just go for it. Just like get it. Like that's how it works. Now, if you are going to buy now, pay later, I do want you to ask yourself a question. Do I actually need it? And can I actually afford it? Or can I only afford it because of this system? And if you can only afford it because of this buy now, pay later system, you need to ask yourself, is it worth going into debt, regardless of whether debt is interest-free or not, because at the end of the day, you still owe someone money for something. Is it worth going into debt for that item? There is a lot more regulation that's going to start coming in around buy now, pay later, which should also be made aware of. And for example, you might start to have a lot more hard credit checks against you if you keep buying things in this method. So my policy in life is always to avoid as much debt as possible. And buy now, pay later, for me, it just screams, I don't think I can afford this, but this is the only method for me to buy this thing that I actually want. If you need it, it's a different question. If you want it, maybe think twice. Second question is, my parents are obsessed with my credit score and how it needs to be high in order for me to, and to quote the parents, do anything like get a mortgage in the future. But I don't really understand what it means and why it matters. Could you please explain? So a credit score is kind of important if you ever want to borrow money. If you want to borrow money, a credit score just shows the places that lend you the money, how trustworthy you are and how much they're willing to repay you. Is it important? Yes, you want to have a good credit score so they A, approve whatever loan you're going after, but then B, in some circumstances, the interest that they will charge you on the product that you're borrowing, on the loan that you're borrowing, if it's a car finance scheme, that would be a product, for example, can vary depending on what your credit score is. So a high credit score could actually result in you saving a lot of money down the line on your monthly payments. Is it important if you're not interested in borrowing money at all over the next 5 to 10 years? Probably not. Is it something you should stay conscious about and try and protect and make strong and make good? Yes. Especially if, for example, you're looking to get a mortgage or a car finance scheme in the future, then you want to start working on improving your credit score, which is done through things like paying off your credit card in full on time, having an old bank account open for a long time, just being a real trustworthy person with money. And unfortunately, guys, that's all we've got time for. So I quickly want to say a thank you to Jonathan and to Bola for their time on the show this week. And remember, you can get the entire show every week live on FUBAR Radio if you download the FUBAR Radio app. You can find us on all socials at That Money Show if you want to ask us questions. And you can find us on all good podcasting platforms. I've been That Money Guy. This has been That Money Show. And you are now better with your money.
FUBAR Radio.